Hello, darling angels. Welcome back to Fluid. My name is Nick. This is a podcast series where we explore queerness in its entirety and the lost connections between all of us, queer or not. I really hope you're all well whenever you are listening to this. Honestly, I'm not even done preparing the episode yet, but I had to hit record because the vibes I'm feeling right now are too good to not bring you in on. Let me set the scene. The sun is streaming into my bedroom. I honestly feel like it's about 25 degrees in here right now. I'm wearing a little pair of hot pants and I've been dancing to Chloe and Halle all morning. There's a sense of optimism in the air that I think naturally comes with spring, but given the nature of things right now, I think we're all gagging for a bit of fun, basically. So that's kind of what I've been pepping myself up for today. Oh, sorry if you heard that. So today we're going to have a real ball, I can't lie. We're going to be exploring the importance of queer spaces. And if you haven't enjoyed, you know, honestly, the pleasure of being in a queer space, then hopefully I can kind of give you a bit of an idea of how sacred they are. So just to recap, so far in the series, we've explored the myth of heterosexuality, right, with Randolph. We also explored the myth of a fixed gender binary with Deblina, and also the importance of cultivating an open and honest space for our youth. We also spoke about the negative effects of suppressing the relationship between sexuality, gender, and mental health. So I think at this point in the series, like, we've already laid the groundwork to really explain and show why queer spaces are really important. People's values don't change overnight, and change kind of comes in increments, or one step forward, two steps back. It's a bit, I wouldn't even know if it's like a linear thing, but there's people right now, queers all over the world right now, that need spaces where there is a buffer between the real world that has a lot of catching up to do and the oases we create that I can only describe as heaven on earth. To explore how I think we need to move forward, I need to welcome you into the belly of queerness, into the heart of it all, back to a place that, in the physical realm at least, no longer exists. Because it's in this space that freedom is cultivated, that expression, creativity is cultivated, all of which, may I add, are monetized, are profitable, and are necessary in this real world. So it's not like what's going on is just for the queer community. This space, these spaces that have existed throughout time, have been hubs for ingenuity, for creation, for innovation. So we're going to go on a little tour, we're going to go on a little journey, and to do so, I'm going to introduce you to someone very special. They're called Fraser Fab, and they are somebody who, well, actually, you know what, I'm going to let them explain how we became acquainted.
I'm Fraser, my pronouns are he, they, and I worked with you, Nick, for, I mean, it's probably just like 18 months, if that, at the Chateau.
I asked Fraser to give us some theatrics.
Oh, you want theatrics? I can give you theatrics. Let me tell you. You want theatrics? You've come to the right place. Let's tell the story. We can do this. I can tell you the story. Okay, we're going to set the scene. We're on Camberwell Church Street, and we're going to say it's a sensible 9 p.m., okay? It's a sensible 9 p.m. It's June. The month is June, and it's quite warm outside, but it is certainly not warm enough to be wearing a tiny black sequin dress riding up over my ass. But alas, I am. Who am I? My name is Fraser Fab. I'm working on the door at the Chateau. And what is the Chateau? So nestled next to a falafel shop and a KFC, there is a completely random, inexplicable hotel on the corner, underneath which is a basement bar. It's a basement bar. That is what it is. But it's so much more than a basement bar. So much more than a basement bar. I would love to tell you that there is a massive queue going around the corner. It's the hottest ticket in town. All the trendy queers are coming. I'd love to tell you that that's what the case was, but that wasn't the case. That That surely was not the case. No, we don't have a cloakroom. No, we don't do draft beer. And no, we don't take hard on the door, but you're going to have a wonderful time, I promise. You've not been here before? Oh my goodness. Well, welcome. Oh my gosh. We are the Chateau, South London's premier LGBTQ space. No, baby, we don't take card, and you're definitely not coming downstairs with that messy falafel wrap. But can you see the green sign over there? Mm-hmm. Yeah, just get some cash out over there, finish your wrap, and come back. You are just tempting me.
I gotta go, I'm late. Are you out there, Chateau? Are you out there? Let me hear you, let me hear you. My name is Coco Patron, and I am the proprietor of the Chateau. Here to give you Southeast London queers the space you so rightfully deserve.
But I do need to wind it back a little bit, because where this story really begins for you and for me is an uncharacteristically shy Nikki D wandering past the Chateau every so often, just sort of like giving a little grin, like, hey, how are you doing? Is Caitlin working? You know, casual couple of times. Always in a look. I'd be on the door. You'd be just sort of wandering by. And here's the thing. At the Chateau, it's a queer space. It's a safe space. Would we just let people in who are our friends? Yes, we would. So you just sort of wander on down, float on down. Again, would love to tell you that there was like a basement full of like trendy, hip and happening, dazed and confused queers. That was absolutely not the case. If you're coming to the Chateau at 9 p.m. on a Friday, you're gonna walk into a stone cold basement with about seven people. And you were friends with Caitlin, and you would just come each weekend and kind of just linger by the bar a lot. And we would dance all the time. And when you first started to come to the Chateau, and I won't forget that, because I think it was kind of one of the first times that I felt like I met somebody or got to know somebody, not because we had the time or the peace and quiet to have a conversation, but because we were just kind of dancing a lot in that little gap between the bar and the dance floor.
That revolutionized my understanding of my body. Now, I have experienced sexual assault. I've had very difficult, well, I know we all have, most of us have, to be honest, but I've had a really difficult experience with my body. Like, I just felt my body, I couldn't get away from hypersexualizing my body, even my own body. I was in a space where my body, you know, wasn't any more than that. You know, it's not like dancing with a straight guy in a club who's expecting to fuck you after 5 minutes. Oh, you're gonna, you know, he's gonna get your number, or, you know, whatever. No expectation, just freedom. And for me and Fraser, that was it. You know, we literally became friends through dancing. How fucking beautiful is that? And that taught me that my body is more than just, you know, something to be viewed or something to be sexualized through the male gaze. It became this kind of vessel for movement and dance.
And so we needed someone to work. And then you came. I feel like the first time you worked at the Chateau, it was for the Hungama party, I think. You know, it was like a day-long festival. I think that was your first shift at the Chateau, like working. And you were wearing these massive, like, faux fur boots. And then, like, a, like, skimpy kind of like gorgeous dress moment, but I'm sure you were wearing the fur boots. I remember the fur boots. Something that I've not said to you before in conversation, and but it's something which crosses my mind a lot when I think about you and I at the Chateau, is I think that actually both of us had a very similar feeling at the Chateau, in that we were both people that were kind of always on the periphery of queer spaces, queer nightlife, people that were working in those kind of environments, and you and I had not yet, like, I guess, like, found our sort of place in necessarily, and the Chateau basically became that for both of us. We created something which really felt like we belonged to it, like we belonged to this kind of thing called the Chateau. But what was so special and important was that was never like, those doors were never closed. We didn't like build a wall around it. And so we could bring people in. And I think that's where our relationship really kind of blossomed and makes sense in this whole kind of story of the Chateau, because you were sort of perceiving this thing, like you were coming in to this like thing called the Chateau. And then within like days and weeks and months, you were part of its body. You became a part of that family. That's one of the most special things for me that I took away from our time there.
You know, I think it's important for me to mention that I wasn't out. I wasn't living in my queerness. So when I, you know, worked on the door, I recognized that face. I recognized that kind of shy, you know, not wanting to be noticed, but also begging for somebody to ask you if you wanted to come in. And that's why I love the door. That's why I loved it, because I would do the whole thing. I make them feel special. And you have to be aware as well, like some people can't be seen at the door of a gay bar. So you kind of have to decipher real quick how this person's body language is kind of showing where they're at. Like one of my bezies from the chat would travel to the other side of London, from the other side of London to come and to be safe and to kind of have a sense of openness and community. It's like you're standing on that threshold. You're standing. Fraser actually says something really beautiful about this that I'll put in here.
I think it's really easy, especially for me, and I know that you're like a hopeless romantic and melancholic about these things as well. I think it's very easy to kind of overly romanticize or overly kind of, I don't know, just like overstate kind of, oh, it was just so gorgeous and wonderful. And there was lots of gorgeous and lots of wonderful, but there was also lots of being in the basement until 3 a.m. cleaning disgusting toilets and having really, really difficult conversations with drunk, problematic people on the door. You and me both worked on the door. And I think for both of us, that was like a lot of learning. Just what it means to like literally be the person who's like on the threshold of the outside world and a queer space of the streets and normativity and mainstream people, and then this literally underground kind of space, queer space.
Yeah, I really felt this working on the door. Like, you're on this threshold. You know that what is going on downstairs is not acceptable up here. And you know that because you're literally physically batting away people who are trying to come down to disturb the peace. And it was a huge learning experience for me working on the door. And we had two security guards. I mean, we had a few, but it was Chris and Aisha. I mean, that was the awesome threesome before the drama. The drama kicked in, as it always does. But anyway, and, you know, I couldn't have been on that door on my own. I was way too kind of, well, I would try my hardest to fuck some people up, but, you know, you need security guards. And so there's that whole thing going on. It's the kind of knowing that people want to come down and they want to kind of look. And we had so many situations of people being groped or, you know, straight people just being so inconsiderate or rude or making jokes. And it was just like, fuck you. This space is literally an escape from everything that everybody down here has to deal with anyway. And it would so be the feeling on like a Friday night, And, you know, some people would come from work, some people would be in their suits, and they'd come downstairs and, you know, their tie would be off, their shirt would be undone a bit, and, you know, daddy comes out and everybody's feeling it, you know? And just that freedom, that feeling of like, oh, we're all safe in here. We are all completely safe in here. I want to introduce another special guest who shared some memories with us from the chateau.
Hello, Nikki. Nick Desbra, this is Zooey Gleaves, aka Lagoon Femme Shema. Now, you wanted me to send you a memory of the chateau, and there are so many. It was one of those, it was kind of like an instantly iconic club, made even more iconic in a way because it was around only for such a short period of time. And I was very lucky enough to perform there and to DJ there and to also be a punter there. And to see so many incredible other performers there. Drag Race's Tace, to be one of the people who instantly comes to mind. My favorite memory of being at the Chateau was probably wearing an ice cream print jumpsuit with a skinhead after watching Mahmood come second on Eurovision Song Contest 2019. And writhing around and performing to 50 Cent's AO Technology. At Craig Templates Iconic and Insane Night Queens of Rap. So that would probably be my favorite memory. It was dreamy. Also, my least favorite memory, while we're on the topic of memories, was when my 25th birthday party got hijacked by a load of horrible straight smut. And that was the first time me and you met, because you were horrified and you were doing the door that night. And so you had to put up with all of these morons going in and out of the club and ruining the night for everyone, which was horrendous. So there you are. You've got my best and my worst in one go. Lots of love. Bye.
And with the chateau, I don't know, like, it's because it was like kind of ridiculous and sometimes like just kind of wild. But not like, oh my God, it was so wild. Wild because it was like stone cold empty and we were getting wasted doing karaoke, or because there was a room. Like, do you remember the nights where it would be packed for like a Cramps night, or Fats's comedy, or Carlos's poetry? And it was like packed with people who were just so... would be like sitting and completely like the basement would be like silenced by, I don't know, Carlos just completely tearing it down with one of their stunning poems. It was a different kind of energy. It wasn't just like, oh my God, yeah, trendy, cool, fun, sexy, hip. I don't know. It felt like it was a space that like people needed, you know?
These spaces are really important. And I know sometimes this language can get a bit lofty, like, ooh, space this, space that. I'm talking about people having space to breathe, people having space to move, to express themselves. And like Fraser said, you know, we would go from, you know, heart-wrenching spoken words that had the whole premises in silence. You could have heard a pin drop. And then we would be dancing straight away and shots would be getting poured and we'd be laughing and crying. And actually, it wasn't just a club. It was just this space in which so many things happened. It was like education. It was humor. It was therapy. It was movement. It was connection. It was everything all under one roof, all in one night. I guess what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to connect to queer people listening and to kind of share a sense of community with you in this moment in time, you know, in lockdown, in isolation, in coronavirus and all the rest of it. But I'm also trying to explain and show why these spaces are normal, sorry, not normal, well, normal for one, but needed to people who might not understand. I think the kind of main point of this isn't, oh no, so sad that, you know, the chateau's not around anymore. Like, it is that, but it's also kind of really looking under a microscope at the wider society we live in that kind of allowed this to happen. And yeah, when you are kind of looking at people having shit wages and ridiculous and expensive rent, being really insecure in the workplace on 0-hour contracts, you know, quite harsh circumstances for independent businesses to thrive, you know, again, ridiculous rent being priced out by property developers, government curfews and restrictions, and just a general kind of Tory focusing on the erosion of the state, as opposed to like actual funding into communities and schools and young people and stuff like that. And I think what's like frustrating is, because what we've already seen in this series is queer history is like removed, is rephrased, is to kind of, the kind of queerness of stories is really taken out. So key example, Madonna's Vogue, strike a pose, Vogue. I got new samples, so I have to sing it. But anyway, like if we actually look at where ballroom culture actually originated from, it was African-American and Latino people in New York using these abandoned buildings and like all these spaces to create this ballroom scene and this culture for them originally. And then it was Madonna who caught onto it. It kind of got really commercialized. And if like Pose, the series Pose, which was, it was written by Ryan Murphy, who I'm pretty sure did Glee, but then also Janet Mock, Lady J, so many other people. It's on BBC iPlayer now or Netflix, either one of them. And it's just so good, but it really kind of captures how kind of people are commodified, especially in this case, like gender non-conforming trans black people are commodified but also erased at the same time. You know, queer spaces are not just places where for queer people to have fun, it's like people to be accepted, to kind of like find community, to have a good quality of life. And in the end, that makes profit for the wider community and society anyway. So it's just like all around the board, we don't really want to lose these society. Like, I hate the fact that it has to be that way, but let's face it, in this money-making world and society, everyone's just here for the dollar. So yeah, there's money in queerness, and there should be investment in queer spaces and queer narratives and everything like that, because the straights fucking love it. Think about how many straight people you know who watch RuPaul's Drag Race and love it, okay? So it's just like, that's clear as day, obvious, and that's just one example. It's in these spaces that we realise that, like, what even are half of the social norms anyway? Ridiculous. But also, the state and community isn't really working for everyone, and it's just becoming more and more unequal and more dry and stale. Like, oh my God, I feel like, yeah. I feel like that's such a point as well. Like, what the F? Do they want us to just live in some boring world? Like, what? You know, if all these theatres, venues, clubs, places shut down, no one's going to be able to have any fun. Everywhere's just going to be new builds. And what? That's genuinely what I think the Conservative government want, and that's absolutely what they're doing. So look, I'm going to wrap it up there. Thanks to everyone for taking part in this episode. Green Femme Shema, Fraser Fab, and moi. We're going to carry on exploring queer spaces, but crucially, next episode, we're going to be talking about sober queer spaces. To all my queers listening out there, I love you. I can't wait to get on the dance floor with you. I can't wait to give you a hug, you know, in a safe, COVID-friendly manner. And also to all the straight people out there who are fantastic allies to the queer community, who love us and accept us and try to understand us. Thank you. We love you. You make the world a better place. Keep doing what you're doing. And also to someone who doesn't know about their sexuality or gender for that matter, high five. If he feels a bit fluid, he feels in between, keep doing you. You do not need to conform to labels or stereotypes. You do not need to know. You can explore, and that's great, okay? But yeah, thank you everybody. Take care. And as always, you can find me on the gram at Fluid Podcast if you want to have a chat in the meantime. Mwah.